Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, comedy. Later on, the Jack Carson Show from 1947. But first, the Jack Benny Program, a CBS radio broadcast from May 22nd, 1949.
Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, as you may know, this is National Pickle Week. We'd like to honor the occasion, but since we can't bring you a pickle, we bring you a man who's a barrel of fun, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, you certainly went a long way for that introduction, didn't you?
Oh, no, I didn't, Jack. This really is National Pickle Week.
Well, dilly dilly.
Jack, a pickle's nothing to laugh at.
Our first joke proved your point. But as long as it is National Pickle Week, I want to say congratulations to all the Mama Pickles, Papa Pickles, and all the little boys and gherkins. Now, Don, let's get on with the...
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. I'm glad you got over your cold. We missed you last week.
Well, thanks. What are you and Don talking about?
What are we talking about? You mean you haven't heard?
Heard what?
All over the country, flags are flying, parades are forming, and you don't know?
Know what?
Mary, this is National Pickle Week. Yeah, that's a cucumber that had its option picked up by Heinz. Hey, you know, Don's right. I am a barrel of fun. Yeah.
For this, I had to get well.
Well, you can thank me, Mary, for sending my doctor over to take care of you.
Oh, fine. Some doctor.
What are you talking about? He's an excellent physician.
Yeah, but boy, is he nearsighted.
Huh?
As he came into the house, I thought I'd save a little time. So when he walked over to me, I stuck out my tongue and he hung his hat on it.
Hung his hat on your tongue?
Then he walked over to the clothes rack and said, "Don't stand there in the corner with three coats on. If you're cold, get in bed."
Gee, I didn't know he was that nearsighted.
He can't hear either.
The doctor can't hear?
I said goodbye to him 4 days ago and he's still there.
Oh, well, anyway, Mary, you're back on the program, and that's all that matters, because tonight we're going to do a very important sketch. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I drove you down to the studio in my cab, didn't I?
Yes, yes, you did. The fare was $1.95, and I paid you.
Well, I've been thinking about the tip.
The tip? What about it?
Look, I know this is National Pickle Week, but I'd rather have money.
You'll keep what I gave you. Goodbye. You've got a lot of nerve breaking in on my program with those silly...
Wait a minute, Jackson. Don't get mad at the cab driver. He deserves a lot of credit. The guy comes in here without a script and gets a laugh.
So what?
Well, that's the way we'll all have to do on television. No scripts, no nothing. We'll have to ad lib our way.
Well, I won't have any trouble. I'm a barrel of fun.
I don't care if you're a barrel of bourbon. Sit down and learn.
Oh, yes,
some.
You do.
Not unless you're 100 proof. Now, look, I'll show you how television's going to be, Jackson. Hey, Livy, ask me. Ask me what I did yesterday.
Okay, Phil. What'd you do yesterday?
I played golf. See, it's easy.
Well, Phil, what's funny about that?
Don't rush me. Now, come on, Liv. Ask me what happened on the first tee.
Okay, what happened on the first tee?
I drove off and hit Walter Pigeon.
Phil, look, Phil, what's funny about hitting Walter Pigeon?
Well, don't you get it? On my first shot, I got a birdie.
Phil, you're going to do a corny routine like that on television?
Well, that's the idea, Jackson. Milton Berle will steal it, get thrown off of television, and then there's a chance for us.
Well, I hope he steals our first three pages. It'll give him a running start.
Ha ha ha!
a Jack. I think Milton is very clever.
Oh, he is, eh?
Livy's right, Jackson. Milton is a burl of fun. Oh, Harris, you're like a car without brakes. There ain't no stopping you.
Don't worry, folks. He'll be normal in a couple of days. Yoakum's moon will soon be over. Now, look, kids, I started to tell you that we have a very important sketch to do tonight.
Oh, hello, Mr. Benny.
Well, hello, Dennis. What's that you're eating?
A pickle.
A pickle?
Yeah, a cab driver gave it to me in change.
Oh, well, how come you took a cab from home?
Oh, I didn't come from home. I came from the airport.
Dennis, have you been away?
Oh, no. A friend of mine is learning to fly, and when he got through with his lesson, I put on a parachute and he took me for a ride.
Dennis, your friend is just learning to fly, and you went for a ride with him?
Uh-huh.
Weren't you afraid?
Afraid of what? We were riding in his car.
Now, wait a minute. Look, kid, if you were riding in a car, why did you wear a parachute?
In case he went up on a grease rack.
Well, I asked a question, he gave me an answer. And it wasn't bad for this late in the season.
Imagine going up in a grease rack. You know, Dennis, you're silly, but you're cute.
Yeah, you dames are all alike.
What?
You go nuts about men who live dangerously.
Dennis.
Kiss me, Liv.
Well, of all the... That kid gets sillier every program. By the time we go off the air... Mary! 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 Mary, why'd you do that to Dennis?
He asked for a kiss, so I gave it to him.
And it wasn't bad for this late in the season.
All right. Now, look, Dennis, we got a very important sketch to do tonight, so sing your song now.
I'm a nervous wreck, but I'll try.
Okay.
In my life called Mary, it's the story of Mary and me. It tells with a tear in each souvenir just how sweet a love can be. In the chapter in my life called Mary are the moments that we used to share. I live to recall and treasure them all, every tender memory there. Songs that we remember, picnics by the shore, making Mary smile or sigh. Walks across the meadow, good night at her door. Still that kiss of goodbye. It's a chapter in my life called Mary, and there's heartache in each little line. It's not in a book where people may look. It's in Mary's heart and mine. That
was a chapter in my life of Dennis Day called Mary, sung by Dennis Day. And very good, Dennis. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight for our feature attraction, we're going to do our own original story based on those two great fight pictures, The Champion and The Setup. In this thrilling story of the squared circle, I'm going to play the part of... Uh-oh.
What's the matter, Jack?
The script. Mary, would you go to my dressing room and see if Rochester got the script for the play?
Okay, I'll be right back.
Oh, hello, Miss Livingston.
Hello, Rochester. Mr. Benny wants to know if the scripts are ready.
Yes, here they are. I was just reading them.
Well, what are you laughing at?
It says Mr. Benny's going to play the part of a prize fighter.
Well, I don't think it's so far-fetched for Mr. Benny to be a prize fighter. After all, he does have a nice physique.
Miss Livingston, you see him with his clothes on. I undress him.
So what?
It's like eating an artichoke. You keep taking things off till you're down to nothing.
Rochester, stop making things up. Are you going to listen to the sketch?
Oh, no. While the program is on, I have to call people up and find out who their favorite comedian is.
Well, I thought Mr. Hooper did that.
We have our own system. Would you like to see how it works?
Yes.
Okay. I'll take some numbers from this telephone book. I'll start with this one. Hello, this is the Acme Radio Survey. Is your favorite comedian Jack Benny? This is the Acme Radio Survey. Is your favorite comedian Jack Benny?
Rochester, I better go.
Wait, I'll try again. This is the Acme Radio Survey. Is your favorite comedian Jack Benny?
Rochester, Mr. Benny is waiting for these scripts.
Okay, here you are, Miss Livingston. Now, let's see. I'll pick another number.
Mary, how about the scripts?
I've got them.
Well, hurry up now. Everyone's waiting. Don, you hand them out, will you?
Oh, all right, Jack.
Now, kids, when we do this play, I want everybody to try... I'll get it. Hello? The Acme Radio Survey? Yes. Yes, he is. Yes, I listen to him all the time. And now, kids... Now, kids, as I was saying...
Boss, I found one!
Good. Now, kids, you've all... Mary, stop looking at me. Now, kids, you've all got your scripts, so let's get started with the play. And now for our play. Let's go, Don.
Ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we present a thrilling, dramatic story of the prize ring entitled... The Champion Setup. Curtain music.
My name is Midge Benny. I'm the middleweight champion of the world. People say I'm a heel. Say I'd slug my own grandmother. But they're wrong. Grandma's a heavyweight. Championship was a tough one. It started 2 years ago. I was trudging along a dusty Kansas road hitchhiking with my best friend, Bubble.
You tired, Bubble?
Pretty much, Midge.
Well, we'll be in Los Angeles in a few days. I hear it's a great place. Hey, Bubble, look out. Here comes a car.
Hey, do you boys want a lift?
Into the back seat, boys.
Thanks a lot.
Don't mention it.
Gee, this is a beautiful car. What kind is it?
It's Cadillac.
I thought it was a Buick. Look at all those holes in the side.
We got those in an argument with the sheriff in El Paso.
Oh.
How far are you boys going?
All the way to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, eh? I got an aunt who lives in a suburb of Los Angeles.
Glendale?
No, Tehachapi.
Oh. By the way, miss, your boyfriend doesn't seem very talkative.
He talks with his fist. He's Slugger Brown, the middleweight champ of the world.
Yeah.
We can only take you boys as far as Omaha. Slugger's fighting there tonight.
Yeah.
Are you really Slugger Brown?
Yeah.
And you're the middleweight champ?
Yeah.
You're fighting tonight in Omaha?
Yeah.
And this is the title fight?
Yeah.
36 years later, we arrived at Omaha. During the ride, I found out a lot about Slugger and his girlfriend, Dill. Her name used to be Mary, but she changed it in honor of National Pickle Week. I watched the fight that night and saw Slugger Brown collect $30,000. It was then I, Midge Benny, decided to become a prize fighter. Bubbles and I hitchhiked to Los Angeles, and I went to see the foremost fight manager in town. I stripped myself to the waist. He looked at my chest and said,
"That reminds me, I'm having spare ribs for dinner."
Now, don't be funny, Mr. O'Brien. I may not look so good now, but you give me 2 or 3 months of training, I'll be a champion someday. Do you hear? A champion.
Now, wait a minute, son. Fighting is a tough game. I used to be a fighter myself, and I'll never forget my last bout. It was with Killer Nelson. I tried to slug it out with him for the first 3 rounds, and then I decided I better stay away from him, so I got on my bicycle. But he finally got me.
What happened?
My trunks got caught in the chain.
Oh. Then you didn't swim the fight. Send three. Now, look, Mr. O'Brien, I want to be a fighter. Will you handle me?
All right, kid. I'll be your manager. Go over to the gym and let my trainer, Punchy McNeil, get you in condition.
Bubbles and I went over to the gym. It was a large, gloomy place, smelling of liniment. Here in this edifice of concrete and steel, men dedicated their lives to the inhuman pursuit of mangling and maiming. It was here that the beast in man overrode all human qualities, and one man would try to batter another's countenance beyond recognition for the sake of monetary reward. Gee, that new rider I got from Lux is terrific. I looked around the gym trying to find Punchy McNeil. Finally, I asked a man leaning against the ring.
"Excuse me, mister, but I'm looking for Punchy McNeil."
"Yeah, that's me."
"Well, I'm Midge Benny."
"I'm pleased to know you."
"Now, look, Punchy, I'm trying to be a fighter. Mr. O'Brien wants you to handle me."
"Okay, but you ought to think it over. Fighting is a tough racket." "Yeah, I should know because I used to be a fighter myself."
"No."
Yeah, I had my first fight back in 1932.
God.
"Yeah, I spent 12 years in the ring."
12 years?
"Yeah, but I finally came to, got up, and went home."
"Well, look, Punchy, I want to..."
"Hey, wait a minute, I didn't finish my story."
"Oh, there's more?"
"Yeah."
"What?" "Oh, well, tell me, Punchy, were you always a fighter?"
"Oh, no, I used to be a musician with Guy Lombardo's band."
"Go on, you were never with Lombardo."
"Oh, yes, 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 I was."
"You're a little flat on that last..."
"Come on, Mitch, let's start training."
2 weeks later, I won my first fight. A week later, my second, then my third, fourth, fifth, until I had won 28 fights. In 2 short years, I was matched to fight the champ, Slugger Brown. I was in my dressing room with my manager when the door opened.
"Hello, Midge. How you doing?"
It was her again. wearing a dress that must have been made by the Hudson Automobile Company. The neckline was so low, she had to step down to get into it.
Hello, baby. How's about a date tonight after I knock out the champ?
I've got news for you, Midge. You're not knocking out anybody. You're throwing the fight.
Are you kidding?
You don't believe me? Here's your manager. Ask him.
O'Brien, are you crazy? Would I fight for 2 years in tank hounds for this? Would I spend 2 years getting my brains knocked out just so I could take a dive? Would I work my way up to the title bout just to throw the fight? Would I? Would I?
Why don't you turn the page and find out?
I turned the page, and there it was. I was to take a dive in the fifth round. My new rider from Lux to double-cross me. I wasn't going to do it. I'd worked and fought to be champion. And tonight, I was going to fight to win.
Introducing at 159 pounds, wearing purple trunks, the middleweight champion of the world, Slugger Abrown. And his worthy opponent, weighing 155 pounds, wearing bifocal glasses, Mitch Bennett.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. The men are in the center of the ring receiving their instructions. They go back to their corners waiting for the bell. And there it is, round one. Slugger comes out of his corner and starts mixing furiously. Midge meets him like a wildcat with a right and a left. And now for a few words from our sponsor. Look sharp. Feel sharp, be sharp. Use a wherever grindstone and sharpen your silly face off. Now, back to the fight. Well, that was an exciting round. Slugger's nose is still bleeding and Midge's eye is tightly closed. Now we're waiting for the bell for the second round. There's the bell. The boys come out and circle each other. They're still circling each other.
Circle each other three times. Then my opponent leaned over to me and said,
"Hey, Bunt. Bunt.
Who, me?
Yeah. Come here a minute.
What is it?
What round are you going to take a dive in?
The fifth.
Uh-uh.
What?
Make it the third.
The third? Why?
My feet are killing me.
Well, look, Slugger, I'm not throwing this fight. I'm in here to win, so start mixing it.
Well, okay, it's your nose.
Ooh!
The champ lands a terrific right cross, and Midge Benny is down.
Yes, I was down.
The referee is counting over him.
Yes, the referee was counting over him.
The count is up to five.
Yes. Count was up to five.
Now Midge is rolling over on his back.
Yes, I was rolling over on my back.
Why don't you shut up?
Yes, why don't I shut up? If I lay there beaten and dazed, my whole career flashed in front of me. How it started 2 years ago, when I was trudging along a dusty Kansas road, hitchhiking with my best friend, Bubbles.
You tired, Bubbles?
Pretty much, Midge.
Hey, Bubbles, look out. Here comes a car.
Hey, you boys want a lift?
Oh, no. We're not going through that again. Come on, Bubbles. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time when we... I'll get it. Hello?
Mr. Benny?
Speaking.
I am the president of the Pasadena Pickle Factory, and I want to thank you for saving me 200 gallons of vinegar.
I saved you 200 gallons of vinegar?
Yeah, while your program was on, we had our cucumbers next to the radio and they all turned sour.
Good night, folks.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
The Jack Benny program on Tuned to Yesterday from the 22nd of May 1949 on CBS The following week on the 29th would be the last show in the first season. Jack Benny was on CBS. Prior to that, it was NBC since the 1930s. In a move radio historians called the Tiffany Raids, when CBS chief William S. Paley convinced many stars on NBC Radio to make the network switch for lucrative deals. Among them were Red Skelton and Edgar Bergen. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the Jack Carson Show, a CBS broadcast from February 12th, 1947.
Good. Good. That's what Campbell Soups are. Good.
From Hollywood, the Campbell Soup Show, starring Jack Carson. Yes, listen to Jack Carson, Freddie Martin and his orchestra, Arthur Treacher, Jack's nephew Tugwell, played by Dave Willock, little 9-year-old Norma Jean Nilsson, Irene Ryan, and yours truly, Del Sharpless. Well, 2 weeks ago, Jack got a threatening telegram saying he had 42 days left. Each day since then, he gets another telegram, and his time is rapidly running out. Now let's look into 22 North Hollywood Lane and see how all this is affecting Jack Carson.
You know, Treacher, a little work to keep me busy is all I needed to take my mind off my troubles.
Yes, sir, but why don't you call someone in to fix the radio and not try to do it yourself?
Well, Treacher, those radio repairmen are expensive. Anyway, why should I pay somebody when I can fix it better myself?
Well, I'm only thinking of the last time you attempted to repair it, sir.
Hmm?
Don't you remember you got the wiring crossed and it mixed up all the programs?
Hmm.
I tuned in on Information Please, and I got it pays to be ignorant.
Yes, it was a little confusing.
Well, to say the least, sir. There was a period of 3 weeks when John's other wife was going steady with the Lone Ranger's horse.
Well, I got so I liked the programs better that way. It was more entertaining. Remember that day Bob Hawke was interviewing a woman who had 26 children? Just then a voice came in and said, "Can you top this?" Hand me that pair of pliers, Treacher.
Yes.
Thanks. Wish I knew why this radio makes that peculiar noise all the time.
Oh, a new noise, sir?
Yes, yes. And the worst part of it is you never know when it's going to happen. I'll turn it on and show you.
At your neighborhood theater now, see Lisbeth Scott and Humphrey Bogart together. Lisbeth Scott has everything. She has glamour. She has beauty. She has...
There, you see what I mean?
My word, do you suppose Lisbeth Scott really has all that?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Humphrey, but I want to get the radio fixed. I want to get it fixed so I can hear the next episode of Horace Wedgwood Fights Back.
Yes, sir. You do enjoy that daytime serial, don't you, sir?
Oh, yes, Treacher. Listening to Horace Wedgwood, it does me so much good. You know, Horace is so fearless and brave. Makes me ashamed of myself if I don't fight back like he does. If all these mysterious things were happening to Horace Wedgwood, he wouldn't be frightened. He'd overcome them.
Uncle Jack.
Oh, hello, Tugwell.
Hey, another telegram came for you.
Another well, just forget about it.
Well, it's from that guy who calls himself the Mad One. I read it.
Tugwell, I'm not interested in what it says. I've decided to ignore those ridiculous messages. Whoever is sending them thinks he can frighten me, and I'm not frightened at all. I'm not even curious. What does it say?
It says you got 28 days left.
Well, just tear that one up and throw it away.
Hey, what do you got the radio all apart for?
I'm fixing it.
Uncle Jack, what do you always have to fix things for? Why don't you just let them get broke naturally? See, the last time you monkeyed around with the radio, you did something to it.
Well, Mr. Smarty Pants, just what did I do?
Well, I don't know, but you even had Gabriel Heater sounding happy.
Yes, and poor H.V. Keltenborn ended up queen for a day.
This trouble isn't as bad as that. It's a peculiar noise in there, but I think I've got it fixed now. I'll turn it on and see.
So if you feel run down and nervous, why don't you try Zippo, the sunshine vitamin? Zippo gives you zip. Why, you'll have so much vitality, you'll go around saying...
Darn, it must be that connecting wire for the condenser. I'm sure Miss Ryan has some electrical parts in her store. I think I'll run down to her knick-knack nook and get one. Gee, just doing a little work around the house today has made me feel a whole lot better mentally. I've forgotten all my troubles already. Yes, it's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day. Are you in, Miss Ryan?
Oh, hello there, Mr. Carson.
Oh, my goodness, I hardly recognized you. You've got a new hairdo, haven't you? Why, Miss Ryan, you look positively wonderful. And how are you feeling?
Oh, I guess I'm about as well as can be expected.
Yes, well, I came in to get some electric wire.
I try to keep up appearances, but it's awfully hard because I never really feel well. I might have a smile on my face, but underneath there's a pain in my liver.
Well, that's too bad. I came in to get some electric...
Every time I go to the doctor, there's a new ache in my diagnosis.
Say, I heard of a remedy that might help you, Miss Ryan. It was on the radio. It's called Zippo, the sunshine vitamin.
Oh, don't talk to me about Zippo. I've taken bottles of those. In fact, I think I've taken too many of those sunshine vitamins.
Too many?
Yes. Lately, when I go to bed and turn out the lights, I notice that I glow in the dark.
Well, you better take it easy before you burn out your battery. But that... Speaking of battery, that reminds me, I came in for some electric wire.
I don't see how you can be making jokes all the time, Mr. Carson, receiving all those telegrams that threaten your life.
Oh, they don't bother me. I've decided to ignore all of them.
But then there's that dark, mysterious woman you met. You know, a dark woman always means trouble.
You mean Tanya? Oh, no, Miss Ryan. I'm sure she has no connection with those telegrams at all.
You wouldn't be so sure of that if you had read the book I just finished.
Why is that?
The hero was a fellow just like you. And he met a girl just like this Tanya. And then one dark night, she murdered him.
She murdered him?
Yes. The book was called The Case of the Long, Flat Actor.
The long, flat actor?
Yes. She ran over him with a steamroller.
Well, that doesn't apply to me anyway. Tanya doesn't even own a steamroller.
Mr. Carson, I hope you won't think that I'm meddling in your affairs, but I took the liberty of giving your name to a friend of mine. He's an insurance man.
Insurance man?
Yes. At a time like this, you should be thinking of providing for Tugwell's future.
Well, but nothing's going to happen to me.
I hope not. But I think you ought to talk to this man anyway. He's coming to your house today.
But I don't really need... Oh, all right. Here's the money for the wiring.
Thank you. I think you'd better put that electrical wire in your pocket so nobody sees it.
Why?
It would be so easy for someone to sneak up behind you and strangle you with it. Goodbye, Mr. Carson.
Goodbye, Miss Ryan. Gee, I don't need any insurance, but I didn't want to hurt her feelings. Oh, well, when her friend comes to see me, I'll get rid of him politely.
Uncle Jack, you're never going to get all these parts back in the radio the way they were.
Is that so? The last time I fixed it, I got them all back in, didn't I?
Yeah, but anybody could get them back in by using a shovel.
Tugwell, just let me do it my own way, will you please? I'm trying to get it fixed in time to hear the next episode of Horace Wedgwood Fights Back. What's that? What's that? Wait a minute.
Oh, it's just the door, Uncle Jack.
Oh, well, answer it, but look out first and see who it is.
Okay. It's little Norma Jean from next door.
Oh, stop.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, honey. Come on in.
What are you doing?
I'm fixing the radio.
Do you know how?
Of course I know how. Mechanics are my specialty. I fixed your little dolly, didn't I?
Not very good.
What do you mean, not very good?
Well, it used to sit up and say Mama.
Listen, that dolly sits up just like it used to.
Yes, but every time she tries to say Mama, sawdust comes out of her mouth.
Well, bring the doll back, honey, and I'll make a hole in her head and pour it back in.
Yeah, and we'll throw in a few radio parts, too.
Oh, Mr. Carson, I almost forgot. When I was coming along the walk, a car drove up beside me and a girl handed me this note to give you.
A girl? Was it a dark, beautiful girl?
Yes, and after she gave me the note, she drove away.
Well, that must have been Tanya. Let me see the note. Yes. I'd know that perfume anywhere. I wish she wouldn't always act so strangely. Last week I lost her in the fog, and now she drives up, hands you a note, and disappears again. Gee, this is a mystery.
Who is she?
Oh, she's my dream girl. She's beautiful. And I think she's in love with me.
Gee, that is a mystery.
Yes, I think I know how you mean that, honey. Let's see what she says. My darling Jack, unfortunately, I must go out of town for a few days, but I will see you when I get back. Until then, my heart will be beating only for you, my wonderful Tiger Man. Gee, think of that. She called me her Tiger Man.
Norma Jean, you better get back out of the way in case he wants to swish his tail.
That's what I get for reading it out loud. Anyway, I think it's the nicest Valentine I ever got.
Oh, that reminds me, Mr. Carson. What I really came over for is because you didn't finish teaching me that Valentine song I'm supposed to sing at school.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I really should get back to fixing this radio so I can hear Horace Wedgwood, but I guess we can stop long enough for that. Now, how does that song go again, honey?
Remember, I sing it to a little boy, but you can do his part.
Okay, let's go. I'm a young lovesick lad, so in love with a pretty miss.
When his arms hold my charms, he begins to sing words like this.
My pretty girl, my pretty girl, I'm always dreaming of you. My pretty girl, my pretty girl, my darling, how I love you.
Promise me you will never leave me. Promise me you will never grieve me. Promise me you will not deceive me.
Yes, my pretty girl, please give me one sweet kiss.
Just one kiss, I won't miss.
Dear, your kiss brings such bliss to my lonely heart. My pretty girl, my pretty girl, please be my one and only.
My pretty boy, my pretty boy, without you I'd be lonely.
Promise me you will love me ever.
Promise me you will leave me never.
Promise me we'll remain together, oh, my pretty girl.
Oh, my pretty boy.
Oh, my pretty girl. That's really a cute song, honey. Now, I have to get this radio working again, so why don't you and Tugwell go upstairs so I can be alone?
Okay, come on, Norma Jean. I'll show you some new stamps I got in my album.
Oh, gosh, the door again. I better look out and see who it is. Oh, it's Del Sharbert. Come on in, Del.
Hello, Jack. I was just going by your house, and I dropped in to see if you'll let me listen to a program on your radio. You see, it's an opera that I wrote myself.
Del, you wrote an opera?
Well, sure, and it's on KXZ right now. I'll switch it on.
Del, what's this opera all about?
Quiet, Jack. It's coming on. I'll explain it to you.
I don't want to say anything.
The heroine's name is Mary Bell, and she's waiting for her husband, Malcolm, to come home. Listen, here's her opening song.
Malcolm, here I am waiting. Malcolm, stop hesitating. Come home to me.
Her husband's been gone 20 years.
I can understand why.
But you see, Malcolm has gone all over these years because he's been searching all over the world to find a soup that's as good as Campbell's vegetables.
I knew this part came in here somewhere.
Well, you know, poor Malcolm didn't know he was wasting his time because there is no other vegetable soup like Campbell's with its fine beef stock and tender garden vegetables. Lots and lots of them, too. 15 different kinds. Luscious tomatoes, young lima beans, green peas, sweet golden corn, and many other favorites.
Yeah, well, I know all of that, Del. Let's get back to the opera.
Oh, all right. The first act opens as Malcolm arrives home. He knocks on the door.
Knock. It must be Malcolm knocking on my door. I hear a knock, I hear a knock. It must be Malcolm knocking.
You see, Malcolm wants to come inside.
What?
I say Malcolm wants to come inside.
Malcolm doesn't know, and he's well off.
Well, Marybelle knows what her husband's favorite dish is, so before she answers the door, she starts preparing some Campbell's vegetable soup. Listen.
Better answer the door pretty soon, or Malcolm and the soup will both cool off. What happens now, Del?
Well, in the last act, Malcolm is...
Oh, darn it, the radio went dead again. I guess you won't be able to hear the rest of it, Del.
Well, that's all right, Jack. I can tell you how it ends. Marybelle and her husband lived happily ever after. Malcolm never left home again because, like thousands of other wives, Marybelle served him big, satisfying bowls of Campbell's vegetable soup. Well, I've got to be going now. Thanks for letting me listen to my opera, Jack.
Oh, it was nothing, Del. I enjoyed every lima bean in it. So long, Del.
Mr. Carson, do you think you'll ever get the radio fixed?
Well, of course I will, honey. It won't take long now because I've just discovered what's wrong. You see, the neutrodyne and the heterodyne were mixed up with the other dyne, see? That made them coagulate around the wavelength. In other words, it was causing the length to wave too much.
Gee, Mr. Carson, you know everything. I'll bet you're the smartest man in the whole world.
Thanks, honey. Do you really think so?
Yes.
If I were this child's mother, I'd worry about her.
That'll do, Rachel. Now, let's see. This wire goes on here.
Mr. Carson, will you get the radio fixed in time to hear Horace Wedgwood fights back?
Oh, I certainly hope so, honey. I don't want to miss this episode.
You know, Mr. Carson, you're a lot like Horace Wedgwood.
Huh? How do you mean?
Well, you're not afraid of anything either, are you?
No, I'm not. In fact, I think I can truthfully say that hardly a day goes by when I don't have an opportunity to display my indomitable courage.
Yes.
What do you mean, yes? It's true. What's that? What's that?
It's the doll, sir. Shall I answer it?
No. Horace Wedgwood would never flinch, and neither will I. I'll go. It's a good day for singing a song. See, I'm glad my mental attitude has changed. I feel better now than I have in a long, long time.
How do you do?
What was that?
I said, how do you do? My name is Laidlaw.
Laidlaw?
Yes. Miss Ryan sent me here. I represent the Last Mile Insurance Company.
The Last Mile Insurance Company?
Yes. Mr. Carson, in your present position, you should be thinking of your loved ones that you'll be leaving behind.
Behind? But I'm not going anyplace. I'm healthy. I feel great.
Oh, yes, I know. But none of us can tell when the long, bony finger will reach down and snatch us.
Snatch us?
Yes. And my company lends you a comforting hand as you trudge down that last long mile.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. What did you say your name was?
Laidlaw.
How far down? No, I... Get one thing straight, will you? I don't need any of that stuff. I'm big and husky.
Yes. The husky ones linger a little longer, but they go just the same. Now, let me look at you, Mr. Carson. I like to get a clear picture of a client in my mind's eye. Would you mind folding your arms across your chest?
Now, wait a minute. Wait, but I was feeling great until you came along, and I want to make it clear to you.
We'll take just a moment to tell you about our policy.
Yeah, well, I told you, I'm not...
You see, we insure everyone, old and young.
Huh?
We've even provided protection for babies. We call that our three-cornered policy.
What does that cover? I'm not interested.
Well, the one I had in mind for you, Mr. Carson, was a quick policy. You pay all the premiums in one lump sum. Then you are protected in case something happens to you suddenly.
Suddenly?
Yes, quite. You're walking along the street, whistling gaily, and then... Well, it could be a banana peel, a loose brick in a building, or that most deadly of all things, a woman driver with a new Studebaker.
Yes, I see what you mean. Whichever way you jump, you're still in front of it.
Now, if you had time, I could show you a long list of testimonials from our company. Everyone who buys one of our policies is delighted when he dies.
Delighted when he dies? How do you know that?
Well, we've received a few messages from the spirit world.
Oh. Well, does your company give any guarantee?
Guarantee? What do you mean?
Well, in those messages from the spirit world, do they mention anything about the climate? Look, Mr. Laidlaw, I don't want to go now. I'm so young, and I've got so much to live for. Gosh, I just got to be here when Richard opens that door. Mister, I'm in no mood to talk about this now. Could you go away and come back some other time?
Very well, if you wish. But in the meantime, please remember our slogan. Carry our policies all of your life, and we carry you the rest of the way.
See, why did that guy have to come around and bring me way down? Just when I was beginning to feel good, too.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Carson. What's the matter? You look forlorn.
Oh, I don't know, Treacher. I feel sort of depressed, is all. At times like this, I wonder if there's any use in going on.
Oh, come, sir. You're just down in the dumps, but there's something that will cheer you up.
Huh?
I have the radio on, and it's just time for your favorite program, Horace Wedgwood Fights Back.
Huh? Oh, yes, I almost forgot about that. This may be just exactly what I need.
I know, sir. I've seen you in a melancholy mood before. But one episode of Horace Wedgwood, and you perk right up again.
Well, it's like a tonic to me, Treacher. Yeah. Horace shows us all that no matter how rough the going gets, willpower and determination will
and
win...
And now Horace Wedgwood fights back. When we last saw this courageous youth, he was in a terrible predicament. His enemies had imprisoned him in a block of cement.
Gee.
And then he was hung upside down over a tank full of man-eating alligators.
Don't worry, he'll get out of it.
But more of that later, for here is our hero now, Horace Wedgwood.
I can hardly bear this torture any longer.
Ah, he'll come through. I know he will. He always fights back.
The man-eating alligators are coming closer. You're probably wondering how I'm going to get out of this. What I'm going to do.
Oh, Treacher, I'm not worried.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give up. Week after week, I fight my way out of some impossible situation. Well, I can't stand it any longer. I can't take it. I'm going to give up.
Horace!
Every week, the same thing.
No!
Tigers, lions, earthquakes, quicksand. And I have to be a hero. You all think I'm brave, but I'm not. Do you hear me? I'm just like anybody else. I'm scared to death.
Horace, what you said!
I'm sick of the whole thing. I don't want to be brave. I don't want to be fearless. I just want him to leave me alone. I'm a coward. Do you hear? A coward. And listen, kids, don't fight back. It's no use fighting. Give up before it's too late.
Horace, no, Horace. Horace. Oh, Horace. Horace. Speak to me, Horace. Say something. Preacher, help me up to bed, will you, please?
Mm-hmm.
Campbell soups are good.
As Boy Scout Week rolls around again, let's think of this year's theme, Scouts of the World, Building for Tomorrow. For the reestablishment of the Boy Scout movement in war-torn countries is certainly a big step toward world peace and understanding. It can't miss being a better world with its youngsters united in a worldwide brotherhood of scouting. It seems to me it's up to us to do all we can to help boys everywhere to understand and respect each other. So let's support our local Boy Scout Council with funds and leadership, shall we? Good night.
Which follows immediately. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Jack Carson Show on Tuned to Yesterday from February 12, 1947 on CBS. And that wraps it up for this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.